SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We welcome you to hour number two live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. In this second hour, we begin our preview of each and every matchup around Super Wild Card Weekend in the National Football League, the opening round of the NFL postseason. Yesterday, DRS, we went game by game through all six contests that we have and started to break down the early line preview, the numbers, the spread, the matchups we would keep our eye on. We will do the same here today, but with a few big questions that each of us will answer for those individual matchups. The three in the AFC in this second hour, the three around the NFC in hour number three, because the back half of hour number two, Mark Zinno will join the show to preview the college football playoff semifinals. We are on the eve of the CFP semis. Tomorrow night, in Miami, it's the Orange Bowl between Notre Dame and Penn State. Friday night in the Lone Star State, it's Texas and Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. So much football to break down and preview for you here on this Wednesday on the Early Line.
No, it certainly is. I'm looking forward to that Penn State-Notre Dame game. I think there's a lot of things to go over. Abdul Carter, his injury, is that going to really affect him in this game? Can he be 100%? Because if he's not, that's certainly going to help out Notre Dame. But also a Friday night spectacular as well down in the big state of Texas, which, by the way, we do love to look at weather, Ben, but we're getting reports out there that the weather not all that good in the Dallas metro area this week.
Yeah.
And the constant updates, we're not postponing the game yet at this point. That's one to keep an eye on here. I don't think they're going to postpone it. But the one thing we do know is if you get snow and or ice in southern cities, it's not like they can bring out their 37 plow units to handle the direction of where the snow is coming from in the ice. You're just left to, I hope it gets warmer the next day. So something to keep an eye on there.
It would not be, of course, as DRS mentioned, because of the actual game itself.
Yeah.
It's played inside Jerry World, AT&T Stadium, which, as we know, of course, is indoors. It would be the travel logistics for the teams, the staffs, the people that have to work at Jerry World to facilitate all of the logistics if there is a snowstorm, which has been predicted for the state of Texas. Again, it's not a Northeast city. It's not Buffalo being able to plow out its streets to make sure it can go on as scheduled. We will keep an eye on that. An optimistic report yesterday, it's not expected to be as bad as previously thought, which should be good for Friday night in the Cotton Bowl. DRS, I do want to take one moment. We've talked a lot about teams that play in Los Angeles. We're about to do the same for the Chargers on the road in Houston. Our show airs on Spectrum Sportsnet LA out in Los Angeles. I'm sure you've all seen the images from LA yesterday with huge Santa Ana winds, gusts up to 85, 90 miles per hour in the vegetation that allows this to be the case. A wildfire beginning in Pacific Palisades that has really ravaged throughout Los Angeles. My dad lives in my childhood home in Calabasas. He's under an evacuation warning right now. We send all of our thoughts out to the Los Angeles community to take care and, of course, to proceed with safety and caution throughout this time. It's a difficult 24 hours, DRS, that is only expected to get worse, sadly and horrifyingly so, in Los Angeles right now.
No, certainly. We've seen the devastation in Maui. We hope it certainly doesn't turn out to be that magnitude, but it's certainly setting a course. The tough part about California is it's not like, hey, it's the winter or snow's coming tomorrow, or we always get rain, like let's just say if we're in the Pacific Northwest. There's no rain coming to help that situation. You just need it to hopefully calm down. But I can't think of a worse type of scenario to be in, because we've had wildfires in my area where you see it coming, and those guys, they're called the hotshot fighters. They're for the firefighters. They do an unbelievable job of putting themselves in harm's way to save your house, to save your life, to save your community. It's amazing how they can work, but sometimes Mother Nature just takes over and there's nothing you can do about it except say, you know what? I hope it goes away. And that's really the stage we're at. So we're hoping it gets much, much better, certainly in the state of California.
DRS, growing up on the West Coast, we didn't have snow days. We had wildfire days if things would happen because of air quality or homes and schools in danger. It is a very difficult thing because it's all based on the wind, and the winds have not laid down by any means. And to Donnie's point, you're not getting any rain in the forecast, and you haven't seen a lot of rain in a while. So the vegetation has grown up. It is dry now because of a lack of rain that really only rained a winter ago, nearly a full calendar year. Again, we are sending all of our love, our thoughts, and of course, telling everybody to proceed with safety in Los Angeles. The Chargers will be on the road this weekend to start off Super Wild Card Weekend, our first of six playoff matchups in Houston against the Texans. DRS, here is the line. 2.5-point spread still in favor of the Bolts. 42.5 is that total. It really hasn't moved much throughout this week. So it's not so much the numbers, it's the big questions that will dictate the matchup and, of course, the outcome. Let's start with question number one, as provided to us by our producer extraordinaire, Joe Friezo. Question one for the Chargers and the Texans. Which quarterback do you trust more?
Man, that's a good one. Like, I would have to go Herbert because I trust that team more than I do the Texans. And it's unfair to answer the question that way, but it's just the way I feel. I think you have a little bit more help on the side here for Herbert with a better offensive line, with maybe a running game that's about equal. J.K. Dobbins coming back, maybe some better weapons overall at wide receiver if you're looking from a Chargers number here. It would have been much different if we didn't get all those injuries on the outside for the Houston Texans. But understanding this, like, trustability, like, CJ's been there before. This isn't him showing up to his first playoff game. He does have a playoff win under his belt. He's played in some big atmospheres. He came from a big-time college that's used to big-time football games here. But understand this, Herbert, just with that absolute lightning ball. And also, the other things that you're trusting too. Like, Herbert now is a dome quarterback. Where's this game being played at? It's in a dome. So it's like, hey, you know what? Those outdoor quarterbacks, you know, going into a dome might change a little bit. The dome quarterbacks going outdoors. You don't have that. So just to answer this question, I'm trusting Herbert a little bit more just because his surrounding cast, I think, is better, includes the coaches as well.
I am trusting Herbert a lot more. I think C.J. Stroud's sophomore slump is not all on him. He has been sacked 52 times this year, in comparison, 38 sacks during his rookie campaign. But DRS, his passer rating is worse. His QBR is worse. He has thrown more interceptions. He has a worse completion percentage. He has thrown fewer touchdowns. It has not been nearly as prolific as a season ago, his rookie season in the NFL. And Justin Herbert, in the back half of this year, has had almost a season renaissance. I appreciate what Jim Harbaugh and Greg Roman told us they were going to do and then exactly enacted it to start off this year. This was a guy in his first 4 years of the NFL that all of the pressure of the organization in LA was placed on his right arm. So they were going to run the football. They were going to be stout offensively. They were going to play solid defense. It's exactly what the Chargers did. But now in the second half of this year, Herbert will enter the postseason 23 touchdowns to only 3 INTs. You see the numbers in the quarterback comparison. They look rather similar, except for the anytime INT price, because Herbert hasn't thrown many this year, just 3 in 17 games. That is remarkable. He will also enter throwing multiple touchdowns in each of the last 4. He will enter the postseason with 281 passing yards at least in the last 3 games for Los Angeles. I trust Justin Herbert more. I trust the Chargers to win in Houston. But Donnie, the second question from this matchup perspective, the winner will take on the 1 seed, the Kansas City Chiefs. So question number 2, which team has more upside to make it more of a game against KC?
It's the Chargers. It definitely is by that end, because if they're going to win this football game on the road and they're healthy going into Kansas City, they're going to be ready to play in a team that they know well, because why? They play them twice a year. But understand this too. You look at Herbert, you know, battling so many injuries over the past couple years in his young career, throwing hand situations, and even earlier this year, ankle sprains, high ankle sprains. He's now back fully healthy, and so is that team, and also getting J.K. Dobbins back. But here's the problem that I have with this. This is the type of year that you do want to, time of year, I should say, that you're going to start to check to see where the public is at. On the FanDuel Sportsbook right now, if you hit that stats box under the game, 81% of the spread bets, they're on L.A. 89% of the money on L.A. FanDuel opened up as a -3. It sits at -2.5 today. That could be troublesome. One of those sharp Joe provides here. Tough team.
Completely agree, DRS. Completely agree. More around the NFL playoffs next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. It is the Early Line. We take that early perspective to the National Football League postseason, which starts on Saturday with a doubleheader in the AFC. It is Super Wild Card Weekend. It is the opening round of the playoffs. And we are asking the big questions that will dictate the outcome and the results all weekend long. We start in the AFC. We just started with the first game of the weekend in Houston between the Texans and the Chargers. Now to the Saturday night cap in the Charm City, a divisional duel between the Ravens and the Steelers. And again, the largest spread of the opening round, a 9.5-point number in favor of the flock against their divisional mates in the Steelers. That total stands at 43 and a hook. DRS, the first big question, how big of a deal is it? Lamar Jackson's previous playoff woes and a 2-4 career playoff record for Lamar.
It is a big deal, but I understand this. You're supposed to live and learn. That's what we do, right? You're supposed to take your past experiences, trials and tribulations, good or bad, and say, how can I apply that to my future? What's the one thing that got everybody upset last year, unless you were betting opposite, like with the Kansas City Chiefs when they took on the Baltimore Ravens? Just be who you are. If you line up in this football game, and I already bet the under 220.5 passing yards for Lamar Jackson. I'm not saying he's not a good quarterback, can't do that. He'll probably throw multiple touchdown passes. But understand who you are. When Lamar Jackson is in the pocket and his first read isn't there and he scrambles for 5 to 6 yards, that's him at his best. Him at his best is not waiting to the fourth read, getting sacked, and not running the football. Because if you take his legs away, that's a big part of that offense. Number two, you have Derrick Henry, who almost ran for 2,000 yards this year. So you have the best quarterback slash running back combo with them in Philadelphia in the NFL. You use that to your advantage. What I'm saying is, I don't need Lamar Jackson throwing 35 plus times in any of these games, which includes the Super Bowl if they get there. Understand what you're good at and how you got there. Lamar Jackson, when he's at his best, Ben, 25 total passes, 3 touchdown passes, no interceptions, 50 to 60 yards on the ground. Derrick Henry getting 20 touches and eventually wearing that defense down, just like he did last week against Cleveland. Bottled up in the first half, keep giving the football, good things will happen, and they did. I just don't want to see them turn pass happy like they did last year and get away with what they're great at. So for my money, I'm not worried about Lamar Jackson, because I truly believe he has to have learned something from his prior experiences. That goes, you know what? Let me be me in this game, and we'll be just fine. That's what I'm going with.
And Donnie, it's one of the reasons you could argue they acquired Derrick Henry this offseason, that they signed the king for moments like this. We'll see if Todd Monken elects to have that a part of the game plan. Baltimore looked great in its first playoff game of the season a year ago. Divisional round at home, hosting the Houston Texans, of course, came up short in that AFC Championship game, also at home. As we made mention of yesterday, DRS, this is just the third spread. This will be just the third spread north of a touchdown for a Ravens-Steelers game since 2011. Yes, the flock were a full touchdown favorite, laying 7 at close way back in week number 16 against the Steelers, and they covered that number, or week 17 against the Steelers, I should say. But still, it's a very large number for a couple of teams that know each other really, really well. But Donnie, this is not the Pittsburgh team that we saw entering December. It's not the Pittsburgh team that we knew in the first few starts that Russell Wilson made. It is certainly not the Steelers team that upset the Ravens outright in the Steel City way back earlier this season. The Steelers won 6 of the first 7 starts that Russ made this year. They have now dropped 4 consecutively entering the postseason. And in these 4 losses in a row, booked as a dog in all 4, just 1-3 against the spread, the only cover by a hook last weekend against the Cincinnati Bengals. And in all 4 losses in a row, the Steelers have scored 17 points or fewer. So the second big question for this matchup is looking at that Russell Wilson-led offense. Question number 2, how many points can the Steelers score on Saturday night?
Like, if they're going to win the football game, you better be scoring 24 because the Ravens are going to score. I like Pittsburgh's defense. I do. It's been exposed a little bit against some of these good teams down the stretch the past month to month and a half. And the one thing that you never thought of is you can bully that Steelers defense, but you can. Look at the last two matchups that you had between the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I believe it was like 6 point yards per carry and 6.5 yards per carry in those two games on the ground for Baltimore. You do that again, that's going to break their back. But here's the issue that I'm starting to have. And I'm not saying it's because back in the day, Russell Wilson, I just mean like 5 to 6 years ago, he made a lot of plays, Ben, with his legs. Like so many times I came on these shows and said, he doesn't even need an offensive line. He's that good at making things happen. He's not that same player anymore. And also when the weather gets colder and colder, you don't have that same slingshot arm that he used to have back in Seattle. Like when you see Lamar Jackson throw a football, it's a rocket down the field. We talked about Justin Herbert, same way CJ Stroud. It doesn't come out that way anymore for Russell Wilson. And if you're not on the same page with your one weapon at wide receiver, which is George Pickens, where are those points coming from? Because you can't just line up and run the football at the Baltimore Ravens. The key usually is getting after them in the air. But by the way, over the past 7-8 games, Baltimore's been a really good secondary and putting a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So things aren't lining up for the Steelers. You know, sometimes you say, Ben, you just catch lightning in a bottle. The Steelers are going the opposite direction. They're not hot coming into the playoffs. Now, if Zay Flowers plays or doesn't play, that could be big. But if you're just asking for the trust on offense, I trust Lamar Jackson way more than Russell Wilson right now. So that Pittsburgh team needs to get the 24. They're not getting the 24. They're just not.
I mentioned 17 points or fewer in the four straight losses to end out the regular season. What is Pittsburgh's team total on Saturday night in Baltimore? 16.5. You would have to think, DRS, despite the fact we can consider these games an AFC North rivalry, no love lost, it can be gritty and ugly, that if Pittsburgh actually wants to win outright, and not just cover as a 9.5-point dog to advance to the divisional round, they need to go over that team total of 16 and a hook. Oh, yeah. And to your point, Donnie, on the Ravens, for most of this year, under first-year defensive coordinator Zach Orr, Baltimore was a bottom 10 scoring defense, allowing more than 24 points per game. In their last three, just 9.7 on average. Yeah. That is the best scoring defense in the last 3 weeks in the National Football League. They have been very, very good defensively, much improved from where they were earlier this season. That's the largest spread of Super Wild Card Weekend, the second biggest in Buffalo. Up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Our final two games in the AFC, which are the first three games of Super Wild Card Weekend. We go three in the AFC and then three in the NFC. Have a very large number. In fact, the only two spreads that are north of 5 points at this moment, and both higher than a touchdown. Baltimore, 9.5-point favorite on Saturday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Buffalo Bills, an 8.5-point favorite against the Denver Broncos in our first of three, a triple header of playoff action on Sunday. DRS, we are asking big picture questions, the big questions for these games that will decide the outcome and who advances in the NFL postseason. This one is a rather simple question, and here it is. Is the spread too high in favor of the Bills on Sunday?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I do think the Denver Broncos are going to be game in this one, but understand this. Is the better football team the Buffalo Bills? Yes, they are. Is the MO of the Denver Broncos this year, if we're favored, we'll be able to handle our business, particularly at home? Yes, it is. Have they shown in step-up chances to go on the road against elite competition and win, not go in their favorite? Sometimes it hasn't. That total 47.5, interesting. A little bit of weather conditions in Buffalo, but from that initial question, yes, I do think that spread of 8.5 is just a little bit too high. Do I think Buffalo wins this game? Yes, but Denver, I don't think, is on a learning curve to say, hey, we just got punched in the mouth 35-10. I think we're going to be game in this game, Ben. How about that?
Denver is a perfect 8-0 against the number as a favorite this year, covering by an average margin of better than 2 touchdowns per game. The Broncos have been elite when expected to win a football game outright, and they often cover even hefty numbers. But that has been mostly against sub-500 competition, and if you want to include the Chiefs' backups, as we had this past week in Week 18, you can do that as well. But as an underdog, Donnie, 4-5 against the spread, where Denver covered in its first three games as a dog this year, or three of those first four covers in the opening month of the season. And then Denver wasn't booked as a dog all that much more throughout the rest of the regular season. In its last five games for Denver as an underdog, 4-5 ATS overall this year, all five have come against teams that currently have a winning record and, of course, into the postseason. And Denver is just 1-4 against the spread. The only cover when they should have, more than likely, beat Kansas City in Kansas City, but the blocked field goal from Leo Chenal, ended that game for KC to escape with a victory. This is the biggest step-up spot of the season for the Broncos. Frankly, it's the biggest step-up spot, DRS, for this Denver organization in the last decade since 2015, the last time this Broncos franchise made it to the postseason when Peyton Manning was the quarterback and the Broncos won a Lombardi Trophy. This is also a great time to go to the FanDuel Sportsbook, our wonderful sponsor, and click on that button that says stats so you can see where the money is coming in. 74% of the money is on Buffalo in terms of the spread. 56% of the bets only on Buffalo in terms of the spread as well. And this number has pretty much been 8.5 and remained at 8.5 in favor of Josh Allen and the Bills.
Yeah, and also, when you're a rookie quarterback on the road in the playoffs against a team that is better than you, which the Buffalo Bills are, the number 2 seed going up against the 7 seed, it's up to you to make your own running game at times, like already looking at some of these options for a little bit later in the week. Bo Nix listed at 24.5 rushing yards. The last four games has been, I think, at a minimum of 23 or higher here, which included last week when he got close to 50 yards on multiple carries. I don't think that running game is going to be there for the Broncos, but I do think Bo Nix needs to make it a running game with himself, and I think he has the ability to do that. Now, on the opposite side, Josh Allen, 40.5. You probably know once you get to the playoffs, man, it's whatever you can do to get that first down. We're not worried about weeks 12, 13, and 14 for you to be healthy. Right. You got to win these football games to make it through. So Bo Nix, for me, he's going to have to provide that air assistance, which Courtland Sutton's very good. You know, Devon Vele, they've actually had Mims step up in the past couple weeks. But I think it's the key for Bo Nix to say, you know what? If my read isn't there, let me make some plays with my feet to keep this game close.
No doubt about it, DRS. And by the way, last year in the postseason, when it gets a little bit colder in Buffalo, not expected to be the worst early January day in Western New York by any means on Sunday afternoon. That's when Josh Allen utilizes the legs even more. At least 70 rushing yards in each of the two playoff games for the Bills a season ago. But not only did Bo Nix throw for more than 304 TDs on Sunday in the finale against KC, he was also Denver's leading rusher. Key matchup in the game. Can the Broncos establish the run at all outside of Bo Nix? If not, I think it's heavy Buffalo day. Mark Zeno joins us next for a college football playoff preview.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It is the eve of the return of the first ever 12-team college football playoff down to our Final Four, which means the semifinal round starts tomorrow night on a Thursday in South Florida at the Orange Bowl between Notre Dame and Penn State, and on a Friday night in the heart of Texas to Dallas we go for a Cotton Bowl between Texas and Ohio State. To preview the college football playoff semifinals, Mark Zeno is here for the next two segments, even for a third segment, to end out this second hour live on a Wednesday on the early line on Sports Grid. Zeno, we appreciate the time as always. Thank you for being here to preview the CFP.
If there was any greater highlight than being part of the early line with Ben Stephens and Donnie Wrightson, I don't know what it is in this world. I got to be honest with you. I mean, is there a better way to 2025 to start than with the three of us?
Mark Zeno's first appearance on the early line in 2025? No, that's not true. He was here on Thursday. I did some bad math. But hey, second appearance in 2025. Our first all together on a Wednesday for a very long time as well. So, Zeno, let's dive right in. Tomorrow night in Miami, it's the Orange Bowl between the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame, the 7th seed, and the Nittany Lions of Penn State, the 6th seed. We have seen this line work back and forth. It opened with Notre Dame as a slight money line favorite, 1.5 on the spread. As of yesterday afternoon, this line got to its peak currently of 2.5. It now has worked its way back down to only 1.5 in favor of Notre Dame and just a few cents of distinction on the money line. The lower of our two totals in the semifinal round, just 45.5. Zeno, where do you begin your breakdown for the Orange Bowl tomorrow night in Miami between Penn State and Notre Dame?
Well, let me pull back the curtains for the viewers here and even the listeners on Sirius XM. But, you know, we don't talk about the games ahead of time here. And one of my greatest joys is watching Ben Stevens' reaction to something that I say, whether he's absolutely apoplectic at what came out of my mouth and just totally distressed, or he actually agrees with me and nods in affirmation. Mm-hmm. So when I say that I'm willing to step in front of Notre Dame again for the third consecutive game, because I just don't trust this offense, and I just don't think that offensively they have enough firepower to win this game. I'm waiting for somebody to remind us that Notre Dame isn't that good. I mean, look, they won the game against Georgia on two plays. The last play before the half where they sacked Gunnar Stockton and fumbled it and got a free score, and then the opening kickoff of the second half that they ran back. Their offense has not really done anything all that impressive. They basically won the Indiana game on one play, and that was the 98-yard touchdown run by Jeremiah Love. So, like, they're finally going to face a team that I think offensively, and I know Indiana had a lot of good offensive numbers, but they didn't play a lot of legitimate defenses all year long, and when they did, they struggled. So this is a team on both sides of the ball in Penn State that matches up pretty well, I think, with Notre Dame. And this is an offense in Penn State that's been very competent for the second half of this season, continually putting up 30 points routinely, game in and game out. I can't get off the fact that Penn State is a dog here after what they did in their first two rounds and where the love for Notre Dame is coming from. I just don't think Riley Leonard is all that good, to be perfectly honest with you. I think Penn State has a better running game here. I think they got a better defense, and the fact that I'm getting points with them, I'm going to go for the third time in a row and bet against Notre Dame, and hopefully I get it right this time.
Mark, most people on this channel call me the most unbiased person on the panels here that we have, because I look at games myself and I say, I hate Penn State. I've hated Penn State since I was growing up as a kid, but you can't let it cloud your vision here. Now, I do think Penn State is the better team overall. I think they have a better offense. But also, let me ask you this question. For bettors out there outside of X's and O's, this is one of those games that comes up where James Franklin as a favorite, climb on board, get on the money train, and retire with a great pension, right? That's not usually the case in flip-flop games or if they are underdogs, which they are. How can we take a look at James Franklin in this game with a big game where he's not favored to win, why Penn State can win?
Well, I think, again, he'll have to rely on the strength of his defense, and I hope his game plan isn't to put the ball in Drew Aller's hands on a continual basis and ask him to go win it. Look, they're going to have some matchup problems here. Notre Dame will, you know, with Penn State's tight end and his inability, you know, his ability to get open and create mismatches. So that's one thing they can leverage. But I would rely on my run game and my defense here if I'm James Franklin. If you want to play a styles make fights kind of game, then your style is more efficient and better than Notre Dame's. If you can get out to a lead and force Riley Leonard to throw his way back into the game, that will be the kryptonite for the Irish. That's the way they lose this game. So if I'm James Franklin, I want to be a little bit aggressive early, try to get a lead, and force Notre Dame to play from behind.
45.5 is that total. Zeno, matching what that closing total was for the Sugar Bowl between Notre Dame and Georgia. And of course, that game stayed well under. It would also match what has been the lowest over under in the 12-team history of the college football playoff. If you believe Penn State is victorious, finally the team that can stand in the way of the Irish, not named Northern Illinois, what does that mean for the 45.5 tomorrow night in South Florida?
Well, I would argue that the over favors Penn State because that means their offense is scoring, right? Like if they can get to 27, you know, in this game, I don't know that Notre Dame can against Penn State's defense. So, you know, you get a 27-20 final and this thing goes over. I think that's Penn State saying that they've been able to be successful. I would probably take the under still, and particularly the first half under, because, look, I think when you get to this point in the playoffs, you are looking at the team that doesn't want to make the mistake first. And so things will be a little bit conservative early. You're not going to be as risky in these games as you were earlier on when you were sort of playing with house money to be in the spot that you're in. So I think it's the under here between these two teams, just because these two defenses are very good and both of them rely on ball security and running the football to sort of set the tone for the game.
By the way, number 11 for Penn State, which looks like Micah Parsons running around out there, is Abdul Carter. They just interviewed James Franklin. He basically was telling us, well, we don't know if he's going to play. It looks like he might, and it'll be a game-time decision. When coaches usually don't tip their hand at all in college football, is that a good sign that he said that, or is that just, hey, look, we don't think it's going to be effective, but we want to make sure you prepare for him and waste your time?
I probably think it's the latter of the two. I mean, if a guy's going to go, he's going to go. And there really isn't much consternation about it. Coaches in college, because there is no injury report that they have to be held accountable for, they play the shadow games with all this, which I think is a little bit silly.
Could be ready to go. That's what they're saying for Abdul Carter. On the other side, for Jeremiah Love, they expect him to be back as well, but did re-aggravate his knee injury that plagued the tail end of his season against UGA. Jadarion Price has the highest rushing yards prop out right now for the Notre Dame backfield, but of course, you must keep an eye on Riley Leonard's legs. Now, from the prop perspective, again, you see this game as Penn State winning outright. Who steps up in the biggest spot of the season and maybe the 11 years in Happy Valley for James Franklin as the head coach of the Penn Staters?
Yeah, I mean, again, I when I look at the prop market here, at least for Penn State, everyone's going to focus on Tyler Warren and everything else, and I get that. But I look at Harrison Wallace and Amari Evans as guys who may end up going over their numbers in this game, just because, you know, Notre Dame should be good at taking away the best thing that the Nittany Lions do, in Nick Singleton, the backfield, and in Tyler Warren. Yeah. So those guys are going to be the benefactors of it when those guys get, you know, locked down and everything else. So I look to those guys kind of as alternate receivers that are going to end up taking passes and away from Tyler Warren and catching passes that will be viable outlets.
The two-headed monster in the backfield of Nick Singleton and Catron Allen has been absolutely elite for Penn State since the Big Ten championship game, including the Big Ten championship game against Oregon. But Notre Dame has been stout defensively, holding UGA to only 66 rushing yards and IU to only 63. But Penn State more stout up front offensively than either the Dogs or the Hoosiers. That's the Orange Bowl in Miami. Now time for a Friday night Cotton Bowl in Texas. Next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The eve of the college football playoff semifinals starting tomorrow night at the Orange Bowl in Miami between Notre Dame and Penn State, and continuing on a Friday evening in the heart of Texas to Dallas and Jerry World, we go for the Cotton Bowl between the in-state team, the Texas Longhorns, taking on the Ohio State Buckeyes. The Buckeyes are the 8 seed. They were not expected to be here, but maybe they are. Ohio State, a 5.5-point favorite Zinno for this game against the Longhorns, who entered the college football playoff quarterfinal round as the national championship favorites. That's now Ohio State, who is a rather hefty favorite against the Longhorns. Again, I think the story of this game initially is the spread. Then we can get into the key matchups that will dictate the actual outcome. When this was one of the projected hypothetical matchups for the Cotton Bowl, Ohio State was an early 1.5 small money line favorite against the Longhorns. And then Texas struggles in double overtime against Arizona State, escaping with a victory as a 2-touchdown favorite. And Ohio State absolutely routs Oregon in Pasadena in the Rose Bowl. Line opened back up for the actual matchup at 4.5 and has only grown in favor of the Buckeyes. So Zeno, what do you make of this 5.5-point spread now in favor of Ohio State?
I mean, it's a tough call. It really is. I mean, it seems like a bigger number than you would have expected for a national semifinal. Ohio State is a wagon right now, and there may be some recency bias baked into this thing because of what they've done in their last two games and how they dismantled the, you know, quote, number one team in the country in Oregon. But we kind of all knew that Oregon wasn't the best team in the land, but that's neither here nor there. You know, you look at what Ohio State has done, it's hard to deny that they are in full control right now, and they look like the team that's going to be the prohibitive national champion. Still, I'm not about to disrespect Texas. And really, when you look at this matchup, what stands out to me, and I can't believe when this total was posted what it was. Did we forget these have been all season long, by a considerable margin, the number one and number two defenses in the country? And all of a sudden, we think that they are not going to be the number one and number two defenses in the country in a game that's this tight. You may hate this play, Ben, and part of me hates it myself, but a little counterculture here. First half under. Like, when I look at this and the way this game goes, it's about game script and sheer just math. If we're going to get 10 or 11 possessions in the first half, to get over 27.5, which is what FanDuel has, I'm not sure if it's still there, it was what they had for a better part of the week. You're going to need, without getting three touchdowns, you're going to need five or six scores, right? And so I know Ohio State has opened up all these games with touchdown, like, but am I to believe all of a sudden Texas and that defense is going to get walked all over? Maybe they will. I don't think it's happening. Do I think there's some regression coming for Will Howard? Maybe. Do I think that the guy that played against Michigan, who went 19 of 33 for 175 yards, may show up more than the guy that played against Tennessee and Oregon? Yeah, I think so. The guy that played against Penn State, 16 of 24 for 182 yards, does that guy show up against this level of defense? Yeah, I kind of think so. So, I mean, I'm just playing the math here that if we get two or three field goals in the first half, you're going to need three touchdowns to get over this first half number. And I just don't know that there's enough possessions on both sides here. What you have to worry about with this bet is that there's no quick score. There's no 80-yard touchdown strike. There's no 75-yard touchdown run that happens. If that happens, the thing's probably dead on arrival. But if these teams have to drive down the field and the defenses hold and settle for field goals here, I don't know if I like the full game under because I think, you know, the adjustments in the second half can be good. Plus, I never trust Steve Sarkisian for a full four quarters, ever. Not in a big game. He only gets half of my money. And the first half is usually his best half. So I think there could be more scoring in the second half, but I think the first half we stay under here.
I'll tell you what's interesting about this, too. Texas playing in the SEC, then entering into the playoff against two non-SEC teams, over 400 yards of offense they gave up as a defense versus Clemson, over 500 yards on offense against Arizona State, now coming up against Ohio State. Go ahead.
Okay. But, dear, like, if you look at the first half of those games, Klubnik exploded in the second half. They had 10 points in the first half. Texas shut them down in the first half. They did the same thing to Arizona State. And like I said, Steve Sarkisian only gets one half of my money in big games. And that's the first half because that's what he's planned for. And he's a bad adjustment coach and he doesn't know how to change the game when he's got a lead or he's trying to play catch up. So the Klubnik stuff, everybody keeps saying that you're looking at the full game. But if you look at the first half, Klubnik didn't do anything. The Clemson offense didn't do anything. It's the second half where they played catch up against him. So I'm kind of going with that script there.
And that is your theme for this game. To look at the opening half overall, though, it is a four-quarter game that will decide who plays in a national championship. Ultimately, Zeno, who do you believe that is, Texas or Ohio State?
I mean, part of me is rooting for the poetic justice of Ryan Day to get to the national title game after losing to Michigan. So, you know, we can run this back again next year with all the Ohio State fans who want him fired. I just kind of enjoy that from the sideline perspective. Again, I don't know that Steve Sarkisian in big games like this is really equipped to win them as a coach. I don't like, again, the fact that he can't make adjustments. And if things get off script for him, he sort of looks a little bit lost. And he's really struggles to play with the lead, which is not good against an Ohio State team that has receivers all over the field that can catch the ball and break things loose on one play. So I lean Ohio State here to win the game. I don't know if I want to lay 5.5. I think there's a definitive backdoor situation that could happen here with that 5.5 when they're up by 10 or something like that in the fourth quarter. Texas gets a garbage touchdown late. That doesn't mean anything, and Ohio State seals the deal by a field goal. I think that's a realistic possibility here. So I'm not crazy about laying the 5.5. If you put a gun to my head, I'd probably lean Texas with the points. But Ohio State wins this game.
So, you know, as we look at the player props, you have shared your thoughts on Will Howard. Maybe he regresses to the guy we saw against Penn State and Michigan, or he continues to be the guy we have seen in the college football playoff for an Ohio State offense that has been an absolute wagon. On the other side, Quinn Ewers leads this Texas team, who was actually offensively prolific in that second half against Arizona State as well. Who is the most impactful player on the field Friday night at the Cotton Bowl?
It's got to be Quinn Ewers. I mean, look, in I said this during the Arizona State game. That dude throws some questionable footballs in directions that I just don't know what he's doing. And he's done it all season long. But if he's on and he gets over this number and this game is going over, Texas has got a real shot to win it.
Texas has played to the over in both of its college football playoff matchups. Same story for the Buckeyes, but that more about Ohio State's offense than anything else. Mark Dinner will take a look at the NFL postseason next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We win with Zinn in all ways, whether it is in college football or around the National Football League. The college football playoff tomorrow and Friday. The National Football League postseason begins on Saturday. Two games Saturday, three more on Sunday, a Monday night cap out in Los Angeles. What a stretch run of football we have over the next 5 days starting tomorrow. Zeno, as we get your thoughts on the overall postseason landscape in the NFL, we start with the NFC. You will see the playoff picture where it stands right now. Detroit, for the first time in franchise history, the one seed in the conference. The Eagles, the two. The Bucks, the three. The Rams, the four. L.A. will host Minnesota, who lost in the regular season finale. The Buccaneers will host the Commanders. And, of course, the Packers have to head to Philadelphia to take on the Birds. And we'll compare these two conferences in just a moment. But let's look at the NFC. The Lions are the short favorites at plus 130, now nearly $2 in front of Philadelphia. Of course, the NFC title will run through the Motor City. How do you evaluate the NFC championship odds in the playoff structure that we have in that conference?
Well, look, it's hard to not take the Lions, right? I mean, you're still getting plus money on them, which almost seems crazy because they are so much have been so much of a prohibitive favorite. If I'm looking at a long shot, as much as it pains me, I'd probably take the Rams just given their path. And the one team I think that could, you know, go blow for blow offensively with the Lions would be the Rams. And Sean McVay being able to pick apart a banged up defense is something that I would really kind of look forward to. I don't trust the Vikings and haven't all season long. The Packers have way too many injuries at this point for me to really look at them. I don't think the Buccaneers or Commanders are teams that when they step up in class are very, very good. And when push comes to shove, I mean, the Eagles, it's still a little bit of a wild card with them when it comes to the postseason. So I wouldn't bet against Detroit at this point in time. The real question is how well do they handle the pressure, right? How do they handle the number one seed? How do they handle a spot that they've never been in before in franchise history and the expectations of being able to do it? And what happens when things don't go their way? Do they panic in a postseason game? But, you know, the Rams continue to be a very interesting case here. I can't seem to figure them out. Every time I bet on them, Sean McVay coaches like he's an eighth grader playing Madden and his team stinks. Every time I bet against them, all of a sudden McVay is back in the Super Bowl crafting up some sort of concoction of witchcraft that I can't figure out. So, you know, but I think the Rams are viable.
Boy, an NFC championship game between the Eagles and Detroit Lions would be fantastic to try to break that one down. If they both get there and they are both healthy, that's one to watch out for. If we flip it over, Mark, here to the AFC, top four seeds, Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, and Texans. A little more top heavy in the AFC, which means the Kansas City Chiefs to win the conference plus 155, the Bills plus 250, and the Ravens at a plus 280 price. So if we start on that top line, Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, it's pretty explainable here. Are there any opportunities outside of those top three that you might make a play on? Chargers, Texans, Broncos, and or Steelers?
I mean, the only real viable action to me is the Chargers because, you know, they're in the division with the Chiefs. So they've played them twice already. They should have beaten them once. I just don't know if the Broncos are going to get past the first round. Like, that's the issue. Yeah. The Chargers, I think, are beating the Texans and moving on, and they'll play the Chiefs in Kansas City. So it's a familiar, you know, familiar sort of background for them. The real question you have to ask yourself when it comes to the future is very simply this. Which team do you believe can beat KC? Is it the Bills or the Ravens? For me, it's the Bills. And I think the Bills have the best quarterback in the league. I've said that for 2 years now. I don't think it's even a question for me. I know you guys are going to make faces when I say that. But Josh Allen is the best quarterback in football. And I think the Bills are going to walk into Kansas City and win a game. Yes, make that face, Ben. They're going to walk into Kansas City and win a game. So whichever way you think it is, the Bills or the Ravens that can beat KC, you're better off getting them now, because as soon as they win their first round game, that number is going to drop when they play each other.
Listen, again, I do not disagree. I agree with a lot of the points that you are saying. I don't think there's great value around the AFC, because I don't think a plus 250 price on Buffalo provides you all that much, as the Bills still need two wins before they would even be more than likely a slight money line underdog in Arrowhead in a potential matchup against Kansas City. What I do agree with more, Mark Zeno, is the idea of value in the NFC. Don't think there's great value right now in the AFC, but you can look at a couple of those teams hosting an opening round playoff game that I think would provide a challenge come the divisional round. I think the Rams and the Buccaneers make a lot of sense. I like having you on, Mark. You know, I like that you think I am the guardian of your picks. That you're even getting reactions out of Donnie Wrightside as well. Zeno, as always, we appreciate the time. Thanks for being here on this Wednesday.
Gentlemen, great to be with you. Ben, the guardian of my picks and my heart. Love you, brother.
Yep.
Wow. The honor is all mine, I guess. Hour number three up next.